The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
If you are passionate about food and how it supports well-being and health, learn more. The Institute for Optimum Nutrition has been training nutritional therapists for 35 years on its highly acclaimed and accredited diploma courses. Start your new career in nutritional therapy, one that will make a difference and help others achieve their health goals. Train with the home of nutritional therapy education. Find us online and give us a call or click on the IOM banner on the UK Health Radio homepage.
Recovery Today on UKHealthRadio.com. Join me and my guests on this voyage of recovery and discovery.
Hello everyone, this is Jim Smith and welcome to Recovery Today. Well, my guest today lives near Brighton and her name's Lou Beckerman. Now, I must tell you all how we met because it's quite an interesting little story. I was in Brighton about 14, 15 years ago and I was in a guitar shop trying out the guitars, and I heard somebody else playing. This was upstairs in the music shop.
I couldn't get a look in, actually.
And I thought, I know what, I'm going to do a bit of accompaniment then. So I was just doing a bit of backing, and Lou actually quite liked my backing, and we got talking, we had a coffee, and that's how we met, really, didn't we, Lou?
We did. I think I remember saying, well, you want to try guitars and I do, shall we play a duo? Mm. And that was really, really lovely. Mm. And we discovered common tastes in music and went on to do some gigs together.
Yeah, we did. We did many gigs. What I was really interested from the onset with your music and your creativity, Lou, was how you were using your music, you know, in a healing way. But anyway, look, it wasn't always like that, was it? Let's start from the beginning. A very good place to start. Sure.
Well, briefly then, I was born into a family of professional musicians. Mm. My dad played all the saxes and violin, and my mum played violin and alto sax. They met through music. They had three children, and my siblings and I, you know, all went into music in one way or another. I actually rebelled against my musical education. Mm-hmm. It was all there for me. But singing for me was like breathing. And I was too young, really, to realise that I probably needed some scaffolding in place. I went to art college, really sang my way through art college, and we had a great folk scene then in the South End area. So that's where my musical life started.
Yeah, well, folk clubs, Lou, I was no stranger to folk clubs in my life. However, I used to get very, very intense and anxious and probably coped in an inappropriate way using alcohol, which really didn't help at all. But how were you? How did you feel when you were performing at that young age?
Well, I was the shyest of children and I developed really, really crippling stage fright. Only once or twice did it actually stop me from performing. But I didn't have any techniques to help. I didn't, thank goodness, I didn't turn to alcohol or anything else. Mm. But I suffered hugely. Mm. And so much so that the voice almost became a burden. You know, I felt obligated to sing and loved singing, but as I said, with the most crippling stage fright that I would feel bad and have sleepless nights for months before a gig.
Mm-hmm. I mean, did you give yourself any expectations as a performer?
Oh, well, one always wanted perfection.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
And I'll skip on a little bit to the time when later in life the stage fright became so bad, and I had some really lovely gigs lined up. And I thought, well, I've got to try and get on top of this in some way. So I started to study, actually. I started to study various techniques that people had used. But not only did the stage fright really get bad, I was about to record my first album, and we were doing it on location in the most beautiful, resonant church in Brighton. The recording studio came down from Brighton, bought all their equipment. We had an audience, we had catering, we had the works. And my voice failed. And I had never, ever had that before. And it was a terrible shock. Singers tend to identify themselves with their voice, you know, their whole identity. And without that, with a broken voice, what are you? However, I did have some gigs lined up, and I didn't want to let anyone down. And I went ahead and did them with a slightly broken voice, but explaining to the audience. And it was the most amazing turnaround for me, in that I realized, you know, you had to be authentic, you had to let go of perfection, and people could identify with vulnerability. And really, people just want to be touched. They're not looking for the perfect voice.
That's very true. That's very true. And it really marked, didn't it, a whole kind of sea change, a turning point in your career as a performer stroke healer.
Well, it did, because in my studies, I realised I wasn't alone, and that people, not necessarily through the singing voice, but through voice, feel quite vulnerable. And sometimes are not sure, you know, what is going to come out, whether they can express their needs, express who they are. You know, not always as singers. So I got on top of my performance anxiety, and now I teach methods of how to do this. I can't say I never get anxious when I'm performing, and you know, the adrenaline's there, and that, and a certain amount is good as long as it doesn't sabotage your performance. But I so love performing now. I enjoy being host to a hall full of people. And it's great.
Which I think is a good time to play your first choice of music. It's from a woman who certainly was quite a dynamic performer. I saw her many years ago in a small club in London, in Soho. It's a woman called Buffy St. Marie, a Native American Indian singer-songwriter. And here she is singing probably her most famous song. Buffy St. Marie singing Universal Soldier.
He's 5 foot two and he's 6 feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan. and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds. He says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from him and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end to war.
That track really takes me back in time. You know, we were students, we were wanting to find things to protest about somehow. And they were songs of peace that we sang. But in retrospect, the peace songs then were anti-war songs. But these days, when I sing songs for peace, they are about peace in the heart and the mind first and foremost. And that's got to come first.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah. Thanks, Lou. Right, so from college, folk clubs, it's maybe a bit of a leap, but I'm interested in, you know, your work within the health service, but within the health environment.
Yeah.
So I know you trained as a nurse. When was that?
I did. 1973.
Oh, right.
Okay. I started training as a nurse with the idea that I would get skills to go and work abroad with various communities. So I did my general training. I trained as a midwife, I trained in tropical medicine, and various other skills I gained that would stand me in good stead for going and working abroad with various communities. In the end, I went into general practice and really found my niche there, working in health education, stress management, and counselling, and chronic disease management, all of which I really loved. All the time throughout everything, I worked as a musician as well. I never let go of the music. And if I ever did for short periods of time, you know, something was very much missing in my life.
Did you at the time realise the how music was to play an immense part in your, you know, your profession as a nurse, healer?
More the other way round, really. I never dreamt when I trained to be a nurse that that would be a passport for taking creativity into healthcare. And it was great because I spoke the language of the health professionals. I had a trust from them that would allow me to walk into hospital wards and work in palliative care. Work with various sections of the community in health, and including the staff, who might not otherwise have this opportunity to use their voices in this way. I can remember one incident. I was working with staff at a hospice. It was all about voice and how they express themselves with patients, because, you know, the patient health practitioner relationship works both ways. And one member of staff got very, very distressed. And it turned out that her story was when she was at school, there was a pecking order of singers. And if you were very good, you were a nightingale. And if you were good, you were a lark. And then coming down the order, you were perhaps a blackbird. And then at the bottom of the pile, you were a listener.
Yes.
And listeners were not allowed to sing. And this always makes me emotional telling this story, because what a terrible thing to do to a child.
Sure.
And one morning the headmistress said in assembly, "Stop. There's a listener singing and I will not have it." And she hadn't sung a note since that day. And of course we all change, and unless we see what's there, we don't know what we have. She came for a one-to-one session with me, and you know, she had a lovely voice. Not that it was about that, it was about using voice. And she now, hopefully still, hasn't looked back. And I just love this this opportunity to work with people to realise their own voices.
Well, Lou, you were the inspiration, really, for a big reason of why I'm still doing my project around rehabs and other treatment facilities, anywhere really, where, you know, I can tell my story with music. And I've just, over the years, I'm amazed at the overwhelming effects that the music and storytelling has on people. And I know your music and healing has taken you into various directions. Would you like to speak a little bit about the Winston Churchill Fellowship? Because you were the one who originally told me about that, and I was actually awarded it. But when were you awarded it? And you went to America, is that right?
That was 2006.
All right, yeah.
And it was a wonderful award, I have to say. And it was for, my project was called Music as Medicine in Palliative Care.
Yes.
And I had 6 weeks going to the States and working in palliative care facilities, also working with the Zen Hospice, which was amazing, and meeting lovely musicians, lovely healthcare staff who were very broad in their approach. And I remember one area in particular, it was the hospice in San Diego, where as a musician I was invited to be part of the ward round in the morning. And there were the consultants, pharmacists, nurses, physios, the whole medical team, plus complementary practitioners, plus musicians, as very much part, an integral part of the team. And the consultants would say, what can you do for the patient today? And it was a glorious recognition of sound and song in healthcare. But particularly with people who were dying.
No, that sounds wonderful. That really does. Things have moved on a lot in this country now, because about, I think, 4 years ago, I was employed by the Westminster Drug Project as a freelance musician in residence, going to their projects around London and doing my sessions. So, you know, people are becoming more and more open-minded.
Absolutely. It was fairly new then.
It was.
And as you say, it has moved on a lot.
That's right. Music is just so dynamic. And, you know, this whole show's emphasis is on recovery. Recovery today, recovery now. And it's just a huge part of people's recovery, isn't it? As you're experiencing in your work now.
Well, absolutely. And it affects all sections of the community, all ages. And now I find myself running jazz choirs. Yeah. It's always a combination of my passions. If I can do that, I feel I work best. So I have a choir of people who suffer with memory problems, and a choir of people with Parkinson's. I have had a choir of people who've had strokes and they're in recovery from strokes, but mm-hmm. perhaps cannot speak, but can sing music fluently.
Mm.
And this is a phenomenon because music yeah. Is stored in a part of the brain with lyrics,
yes.
which isn't always affected by stroke or dementia, Alzheimer's.
Mm. Yeah.
So I have been the fortunate one to find this path, and it's been hugely satisfying, and people seem to find it very, very beneficial.
Yeah, which I think brings us to your second piece of music. Would you like to introduce it yourself, Lou?
Yeah.
It's played by Nigel Kennedy, isn't it?
Well, yes, I'd really like this piece played by Nigel Kennedy because he's such a maverick.
Yes,
he is. And just cuts through all the pomp of anything. But it's the Bruch Violin Concerto, number one in G minor. It's the slow movement, the adagio. And the sound of the violin will always touch me because of my parents' play.
Thank you.
Wow, what a piece of music, played by, as you say, the maverick, Nigel Kennedy. I went to see Nigel Kennedy, not knowing that I was going to see Nigel Kennedy. Several years ago, I went to a Teenage Cancer Trust concert at the Albert Hall. And I forget, I think, was it Mark Knopfler? Yeah, Mark Knopfler was going to play with Eric Clapton, which was quite a bill. Double bill. But Mark Knopfler, that's right, Mark Knopfler had had an accident. He'd fallen off his motorbike. Okay. So he was unable to play that night. But they introduced Nigel Kennedy. And he was remarkable. Mm. He was incredible.
Breath-stopping,
yes.
Isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Just one experience I had a few years ago was listening to him at the prom doing Vivaldi's Four Seasons, and he had the Palestinian strings with him and the Orchestra of Enlightenment.
Yeah.
And, oh my gosh, I could listen to that time and time again. It is so exciting. It's Vivaldi with a Middle Eastern flavour.
Wow.
And cuts across all boundaries and was so exciting. Mm. And he's just creative and fun, but such a beautiful, soulful musician.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, choirs in the last several years, really, Lou, have become, well, very much part of our culture, haven't they? You know, popular culture, you know.
Because we were a country that didn't used to sing.
No, well, that's right.
Well, ancient in the country we did, but recently we were a nation that didn't really sing.
Yeah.
And that's changed.
It has changed, hasn't it? And there's been, like on television, you know, competitions for choirs at schools and just in the community. But you believe quite a lot in this, don't you?
Well, and it's lovely that everyone now hopefully feels they can have a go.
Mm.
And it's not about having a good voice or not a good voice. It's just about having a voice within a community.
And
it's just great to watch these communities grow through song.
Yes.
You know, people breathing together and singing together just instinctively feel that they belong to each other and that they know each other. And you can cut through so much formality. I remember when I did go on the Churchill Fellowship, and went to meet one of the musicians in a cancer hospital. And I was waiting for him in the lobby, and he came. We'd never met each other before. It was another gym, actually.
Yeah. Yes.
And he didn't say a word to me. He just beckoned, and we sat down, and we made music.
Yes.
In the lobby of the hospital.
Yeah.
And he said, "Now I've met you."
Oh, that's lovely.
Which is lovely.
That's right.
And I've remembered that.
Yes.
And, you know, often with a new group of people, we will just make some music instinctively.
Yes.
And then, you know, exchange the usual formalities. But already we've got to know each other a bit.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. In my session I do, and, you know, I play certain songs that were very pertinent for experiences in my life. And I never forget, you reminded me, I don't know why, but I've just got that memory of a young woman sitting to my right after I played The Streets of London, which is a very poignant song in my life. But she was crying towards the end of the song. And after I'd finished, I asked her if she was okay. And she said, "Oh, yes." She said, "I love that song. It's my favourite song." She says, they're tears of mixed emotion, really. But she said, home was a very difficult and abusive environment. So I used to love going to school. And at school, we sang The Streets of London. And that's, you know, and to her, that song was joyous.
Yeah.
And it represented an escape, and it represented freedom. And that's what interests me, really, how different songs or pieces of music mean different things to different people.
Of course. And in the choirs, you know, I really give people permission to cry, to laugh, to engage with this piece of music. And if they do that, I'm always grateful.
Mm.
And we'll always say to people, please, people think they should leave yeah. if they get too emotional.
Mm, mm.
But actually, it's lovely.
Yeah.
It's and I'm always grateful to people who engage with the music and let it in and yes. let it do its job.
Yes, that's right. Do you remember you mentioning somebody, James Taylor? He happens to be one of my favourite performers. Mm. And some years ago, you said, do you want to come and see James Taylor in Brighton? Do you remember that?
Yes, we went, absolutely, because we knew James.
Yeah.
Because he was patron of a healing centre I worked for.
That's right, that's
and,
right.
It was lovely. We were able to go backstage.
We were, yeah.
I knew
yeah, yeah.
I wanted to introduce you yes. to James.
yeah, yeah. What I often, you know, I play a lot of his songs and it's a very old, I think he's very young, he's kind of in his 30s, and he does this beautiful song called Shower the People, mm. You Love with Love.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic song.
Mm.
And he, on this particular YouTube video, he comes on and he's got this reel-to-reel tape and he switches it on. And it's a tape of James Taylor harmonising to his... himself, you know, yeah. but when he's doing this, he's singing it, the camera is panning in the audience and there's quite a few people crying.
Yeah,
it's such an emotional yeah. charge, yeah. that song.
And absolutely, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
But you can also turn that round,
yeah.
to say, allow yourself to be showered in love.
Yes, yeah, of course, you know? Yeah.
And perhaps especially,
yeah.
well, not especially, but also as a performer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you give a lot, mm. but if you allow it, you get so much back.
Oh, you get so much back, yeah.
That's why I'll often say to people, you know, if the more yeah. people in your audience, the better, not the scarier,
no.
the better. Because yeah. if there yeah. are 500 people, you're blessed 500 times.
That's right. Nice. That's a great way of looking at it. But I love that concept of, you know, the more you do, you try and put back, but you get more back. You yeah. know, I'm involved in a fellowship where we do a lot of service because we're grateful. But the more service one does, the more you get back, and then there's more gratitude. So you can never, yeah. never fulfill everything. It's
yeah.
it's an ongoing thing, isn't it? All
absolutely.
Of this. It's just yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And generally, people want you to do well.
Yes, that's a very nice expression. People do want
don't
you
they?
To do well.
You don't get an audience that doesn't want
no.
you to do well.
No, and the fact that they've come to see you.
Yes.
They're there because they want to be there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But even, it's funny, even gigs, I've had a gig for the last couple of years, once every 7 weeks, at a cafe restaurant where people haven't come along to see Jim Smith. They've come along to eat the food. I happen to be playing music in the corner.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Yes. I accept that and I'm playing away. But what's a real bonus, I don't know if you found this, when you're doing a gig like that, is that sometimes at the interval or at the end of the gig, people come up to me and say, oh, I really like that song. They're normally of the same era as me. They say, oh, I really like that, took me back that song. And so they have been listening.
Absolutely. And what you've done is provided the ambience, the atmosphere for them to relax,
yeah.
listen,
yeah.
and be with their,
that's right.
you know, their friends as well.
That's very true.
So
yeah.
It's great.
It's great. Well, I'm sitting in this delightful room with yellow walls. I particularly like yellow walls because in my flat I have yellow walls, but
oh.
it's very vibrant, very bright. And one of the paintings up on the wall, Lou, is it's almost your trademark, isn't it? It's a beautiful painting of a butterfly.
It's called It's Never Too Late to Flap Your Wings and Sing Your Song.
Really? Is that... Have you got any plans for any art this year? Have you?
Well, it's funny you should say that because I'm hoping to have a studio quite soon. And, you know, art alongside music, but art was my first training. And I did work in illustration for a while and then moved into fine art. And I've really got itchy fingers now, and I would like to come full circle. And in fact, recently I took a portrait class just to see if I could still make marks.
You know,
if I could still observe and translate and make suitable marks. And it was great. I was quite nervous starting again from scratch. But I loved it. And I've got a project in mind, which, you know, it's painted, big paintings, incorporating landscape and jazz and the whole damn journey. And I'm really looking forward to that.
That sounds fantastic.
Hopefully later this summer I can start on that. Plans, well, just to bring everything full circle, I suppose, and incorporate all the experience and hopefully be able to offer more. We're thinking of starting a new community choir in Brighton. That'll be in the autumn. There'll be a jazz choir.
Jazz choir,
So, I discovered jazz
about
10-ish years ago. And
again,
did a bit of study and have loved singing with jazz bands, made an album. I love gigging. It's been nice for me to put my guitar down. I'm by no means a proper guitarist. And just concentrate on the vocals and listen to the greats and just move forward with that. I've really enjoyed it.
My second guest, actually, Richard, an old lifelong friend, really. He's a saxophonist. He loves jazz. And his son, who I've seen grow up, Miles, actually had just finished at Middlesex University. He got an honours in jazz guitar. And he's a wonderful jazz guitarist.
I wonder why he was called Miles.
I wonder. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so jazz is obviously a huge part of your life now. And you're in a trio, aren't you, as well?
Trio? I've got a new trio. We're three women and we're called Foxy Vox. And, you know, we're not young things. And it's just a nice feeling that the three of us are women of a certain age with a certain amount of experience doing our thing. And we're quite eclectic, but quite jazz as well. And the two women I work with are just lovely. They're out of the acting fraternity as well. And we're kind of hoping to bring songs to life through acting them out as well.
Yeah.
So we've got some really nice gigs lined up.
So, Lou, would you like to, give the listeners the names of Foxy Vox?
Foxy Vox is me, Lou Beckerman, and Sarah Carpenter, who's a fabulous vocalist, and Carol Sloman, who also is playing the piano. And sometimes I bring out my guitar as well.
You do? Oh, good.
And they're, you know, they're both great singers.
Yeah,
love playing with them.
What really attracts me, you know, with your work is that you've never lost that strong thread, that strong connection, with health and with people's well-being. And you've got some plans this year for various things.
Yeah, I've got four workshops this year for the Stroke Association. Using music to refind the voice and use it. And gain confidence in the voice again. My choir of people with Parkinson's is going from strength to strength. Essentially, we do a lot of jazz, but they've got a great sense of humour. And one of the new songs we're working on is Hippie Hippie Shakes. and our theme song is our version of Good Vibrations.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, great fun to work with.
It's funny, you know, it's great to laugh at oneself. I saw on the TV the other week a stand-up, a guy who's got Parkinson's.
Right.
And he was doing this stand-up about himself.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful.
Yeah.
He was kind of laughing at himself, but, yes. you know, in
yes.
total self-acceptance, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they are amazing to do that, I have to say.
Yeah. And what else is coming up for you?
Well, I have done some writing.
Yeah.
I've interviewed various jazz vocalists for a jazz magazine, Sussex Jazz Mag. I think I've got plenty to be going on with.
You have. It sounds like it. It really does.
Lucky.
Well, you know, this all started, listeners, with, I suppose, me being a bit assertive all those years ago in a music shop in Brighton. So it just shows you where a bit of assertion can lead you. A great friendship. She's a great woman, Lou Beckerman. Thanks for taking time to be interviewed for Recovery Today. And it's your last choice of music. And actually, it was Richard, my other guest. His last choice of music was a jazz great. And it's, would you like to say who it is and what he'll play?
Well, you know, my love of jazz just goes on growing, and I love the freedom of it. And this is John Coltrane, saxophonist and composer, and it's a song called Equinox, which is a minor blues. And again, the sound of the saxophone will always take me back to my parents, mostly my jazz, my dad playing jazz at home.
Yeah.
I sing this, I love this song, and John Coltrane, you know, through his career, became more and more spiritual with his music.
Yes.
And I like to bring in a Tibetan singing bowl to this and give the audience a sort of meditative experience, I hope.
Wonderful. Lou Beckerman, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and join me next time. Here's the number of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drinking problem. The number is 0800 917 7650. That's 0800 917 7650. The number of Narcotics Anonymous, this is a fellowship for anyone who has a drug problem. That's from 10 a.m. till midnight. The number is 0300 917 7650.
999 1212. 0300 999 1212. And finally, Al-Anon, which is a fellowship to support family and friends of the alcoholic. It's from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. The number is 0207 403 0888. That's 0207 403 0888.